Now then, we have our next guest on the line, so let me just get rid of Jamiroquai there. We've got Tony Gosling joining us from the United Kingdom. Last Monday, speaking in the House of Commons, Philip Holobon, a Conservative benchback MP, said, how can it be in any way acceptable for members of Her Majesty's government, from the Prime Minister downwards, to encourage foreign heads of state to comment on the EU referendum? Is this not demonstrative of the fact that the International Bilderberg Group is ganging up against the British people? Moreover, of course, since then we've seen former CIA head David Petraeus deciding to make comment about the issue too. Tony, I welcome you to the programme this morning.
Hi, Pippa.
Now, first of all, let's explain to people who don't know, anybody who's listening who doesn't know, what the Bilderberg Group is.
Well, first of all, I'd say a little to sort of separate what from what Philip Holobone said about internationalism from Bilderberg, because, well, I mean, I don't think it necessarily follows from what he's saying that Bilderberg's behind this, but he's certainly right in that actually what's betrayed is that the figures who have invited, that is, in the UK, people from abroad to comment, what they're doing is they're indicating that their loyalty is not to Britain and that their interest is not necessarily in Britain, that they're internationalists. So what they're saying is, effectively, well, we believe that the future of Britain lies in kind of international organisations and an international order rather than in sovereignty in Britain. I also comment that, you know, the whole business of whether, what the Queen thinks about it, Brexit or not, is just utterly hypocritical and hilarious and betrays the idiocy and almost a propaganda-like nature of the whole debate, because obviously the whole thing is about sovereignty and about her, and the idea that she hasn't got a view on it and can't be included is just farcical. It shows how little real discussion and debate we're getting about Brexit and the benefits of it or otherwise. And go back to your original question, the Bilderbergers, well, they're part of a whole sort of pathway, really. It started, I think, I mean, from my research, in 1942 in Berlin, where the first discussions were had about something called the Europäische Wirtschaftsgemeinschaft, which was by the Germans, obviously. And it was a discussion which was initiated by the German cartel at the time, the main instigator of which is something called IG Farben, which was a massive industrial and chemical conglomerate in Germany. And they'd worked out, really, how to control the game. It's a private industry to control pretty much all public procurement and that sort of thing. And that's, for me, I mean, certainly looking at it, that's where it started, 1942. Then you get the first Bilderberg conference taking place after the war in 1954, and you go from there. But the basic thing with the EU, whole EU debate to me is, I mean, I was born in the early 60s, and we entered the EU in 1973, even though we had the EEC, well, it was the EEC at the time, referendum 2 years afterwards. So how did that happen? I mean, this is basically logic in it all, is that we actually joined the European Economic Community 2 years before we had a vote on it. So the vote was, I suppose, to say, well, we've had enough of this, we're going to leave, but it was only 2 years in. So there's all sorts of hypocrisy involved in the whole business. And also, I think, putting the roots firmly in the middle of Berlin, in the middle of the Third Reich, is, you know, something which you're not really hearing much about in all the debates that are being had about it all.
Well, clearly not. I mean, Bilderberg, in fairness, we don't hear an awful lot about it. In fact, every year when Bilderberg gathering takes place, we hear more about the people who demonstrate outside it than we actually do about anything that goes on within it.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, it's taboo, totally taboo. I mean, particularly with, there are some media that will touch it a little bit, which are things like The Guardian, the BBC. But for example, with The Times, I mean, I get a call quite regularly before the Bilderberg conference from The Times, a sort of sarcastic phone call, where they say, oh, we're doing a little teaser for Bilderberg, what do you think is going to happen? And of course, nothing ever appears in the newspaper. And even if I tell them what I think is going to happen, all they're using it for is their own kind of intelligence service as to what critics might be about to say about it. So, yeah. You know, it is effectively a kind of in joke amongst some journalists that are on the inside, and people like The Economist and The Times are regularly there. I mean, the general manager for Rupert Murdoch will go to these meetings, but they know that it's basically for them. It's not for the readers and for the listeners.
Let's look at the bigger picture here. Now, this, of course, Brexit. 23rd of June, we've got a referendum in the UK about whether or not England should stay within Europe. And that is an issue for British people to decide, and many of European many Europeans will have an interest in it. However, we're seeing a huge amount of interference, if you like, from our friends on the other side of the pond. It was a couple of weeks ago, I think, that Barack Obama made his statement about it, and now we've seen David Petraeus, of all people, suggesting that Brexit would make the world a less safe place.
Okay, let's go back to the 1980s. For those of your listeners that remember the 1980s, there was a terrific book out, which you can still get online, called The Unsinkable Aircraft Carrier. It's written by Duncan Campbell, who's one of my heroes, really. He was an investigative journalist in the 80s who had military sources who leaked a lot of information, for example, about things like what would happen in a state of emergency in Britain. Basically, you get a kind of US chain of command instituted where British military was subordinate to American military. And another book he did, which was terrific, was called War Plan UK, along similar lines. And this really showed those of us in the 1980s just how influential the US was behind the scenes in Britain. I mean, you know, the unsinkable aircraft carrier. It's the way that a lot of Europe also views Britain. A lot of Europeans also view Britain is as just as simply a cat's paw for the United States, which was something, I suppose, which was instituted by the dependency on Britain at the end of the Second World War, and the Marshall Plan, this kind of thing, the idea of Britain saying, well, thanks very much, help us, we need some help to reconstitute ourselves and rebuild Britain after the war. And it's been the case ever since. We also see, you look around the country, you can see that Britain is almost remodeling itself on the disastrous model of the US. I mean, I say disastrous because of just generally look at things like the incarceration rates in America, and you know, it's almost massive inequalities between rich and poor. That's what it seems is happening in Britain. We've got their mayors being instituted all over Britain, all the major cities now being strong-armed into having mayors, police commissioners, exactly like in the US. I mean, that's just a few of the models. The media being, mostly privately owned, corporate motivated, the lack of regulation going on in the city, and general, idea of small government. This is how Britain is changing to look more and more and more all the time like the US. So it's hardly surprising if many of our senior people, leaders, so-called leaders anyway in Britain, just look to the US for inspiration all the time.
Well, we have David Petraeus. Now, his angle is that the dangers and challenges that threaten us around the world, given those, this is a moment when the West and its institutions, including the EU, need to be drawing together, not pulling apart, not least from a national security standpoint. None of the problems the US and UK face will become easier to solve if the UK is out of the EU. Now, that's in the light of what's just happened in Brussels, obviously, is an element of fear-mongering in this.
Look, it's about centralisation of power. I think there's only a limited number of really wicked people in the world. And if those really wicked people, as I believe, and my research over the years has shown, I mean, for example, arms dealers, people who profit from war, are trying to run things, then they have to centralise power. And that's what's happened in the United States. We've seen it over, you know, literally centuries and decades. You've gone from individual states running their own affairs and federating in a loose way to Washington, to complete centralized power, but by big institutions like the FBI in Washington. And we're seeing a similar sort of thing going on in Europe, aren't we, the United States of Europe. No one really seems to want to talk about it like the United States of Europe, but that's exactly what it is. And so that's why all these people are weighing in. I think it's just simply because there is a really massively concerted effort to centralise power. I mean, for example, just take a look at Scotland, where all the various county police forces have been merged into one gigantic thing called Police Scotland, all under one person. So you've got a massive hierarchy. Look, when we designed our policing system 100 or so years ago, it's more than that, isn't it? We designed it specifically not to have centralised power in one person's hand. And it's basically the fact that we've got megalomaniacs, I think, just running things. You know, again, this is why we're seeing so many important parts of this Brexit debate just not happening, like the fact that since 1973, Britain has just totally declined as a nation, as a power. Our industry has been decimated, etc. And yet nobody seems to mention these basic facts in the whole debate.
What do you see in terms of the influence that, American hierarchical figures might have on the British public? Do you think that the influence is there, that somebody like Petraeus's words would make a difference?
Well, I don't know, actually. In some way, maybe it works in the opposite direction. I mean, it's like when someone like Tony Blair stands up and says, oh, I think it's very important that, Britain stays in Europe. I think the net result of that is that you'll get more of a bunch of people looking at it and saying, well, look, let's vote for Brexit then. If Blair likes it, then it must be bad. I mean, I think there's quite a lot of that like to go on during this election, this referendum. But look, I mean, I'm actually a bit sceptical about what's going to happen here, because I don't think that these people are really into democracy or into leaving things to chance. I don't think they leave a lot to chance. So they may well have sat and calculated that Britain is going to stay in, and that's what we're going to do it. I mean, we've seen these attacks in Brussels, haven't we, just last week. Looking at that, the effect of that is probably going to be more sympathy towards the EU and, whatever it is, 35 people dead, I think, and saying, well, actually, look, we're all in this together, and maybe it's best if we stay as a club and fight this terrorism together rather than, go off into separate countries and try and fight it alone. I mean, the immediate call was for, giving up their intelligence sovereignty and their military sovereignty and getting together and one kind of joint intelligence military unit, which is, again, more and more centralisation of power. And that centralisation of power, certainly looking at what's been going on in Europe over the last week, particularly this Brussels attack, and there's also, of course, this attack in Ankara in Turkey, which is part of NATO. It certainly doesn't look as if they're going to be stopping these attacks anytime soon.
And tell me, Tony, you live and work in England. What's the general mood? You know, we are always looking here in the run-up to the referendum for different perspectives. Clearly, we as expats live here in Spain and listen to the news. What about you living in the UK and actually hearing what people are saying?
Well, look, the general mood music, which is kind of set by the media, that is to say people who just follow what they think everyone else is thinking, which they've got through the press rather than face-to-face asking people, is definitely let's stay in. But having said that, I mean, I've got a lot of my friends don't really think like that. And people like my own acquaintances are more, should we say, independent-minded, and those are the opposite. So, I think it's going to be a pretty close call. I don't think it's going to be a big, big swing one way or the other. That's my own feeling. I think it's things like this Brussels event, which I think are going to be influencing people. We've had an incredible week, Pippa, haven't we? We had, it was Ankara on Saturday, 28 people died in Turkey, then 35 in Brussels on Tuesday. In Baghdad, a bomb at the football stadium on, on Good Friday, 41 people dead, and then yesterday in Lahore, Lahore, 65. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's almost as if these things are happening so fast that there is never enough time in the newsrooms of the mainstream media to really analyse any single one of them, because as soon as you're starting to look at one, the next one's happened, and that really bothers me. I mean, there's another thing, of course, and that is that what we've got going on in Yemen. I mean, there was an attack which didn't even make the news, where 80 people in a marketplace were killed by Saudi bombs. And, you know, and yet that's not referred to as terrorism. That's apparently a war.
That was 2 weeks ago, and within about a week of that, the Saudis said that they were going to be pulling back operations in Yemen, which I interviewed a political analyst in Yemen, in Sana'a, the day after that, and Saudi jets were circling overhead as he spoke to me, and nothing of the sort happened.
Well, there may be a ceasefire, it looks like, about, I think it's 17th of April there. But, you know, it's just the
picture. There was a huge protest there, demonstration.
That's right.
Anti-Saudi demonstration. And it's been very interesting to watch that on social media, the photographs of thousands of people gathered. A very touching picture of a gentleman carrying his elderly father on his shoulders to bring him to the demonstration, anti-Saudi demonstration. And those pictures to have been shown to have been used actually by the Saudis, claiming that those were pro-Saudi demonstrations, when it's clear to see that they actually weren't.
Well, they're attempting to use the mainstream media. I think it's fair to say all over the world is now, we get this going into sort of full-on propaganda mode, where they think the people that like to manage our lives, the military and the governments, etc., are using the media simply to bamboozle people, and there's very little, you know, commentary on many of the major issues. You're getting just one side of the story being put by, for example, BBC presenters. I mean, I remember seeing a hard talk the other day about Turkey with a woman who was running a newspaper, English language version of the Today Zaman newspaper, and all she was getting was hostile, tough questions. Well, her newspaper's just been shut down, and so there's only one. You're only getting one side, it seems, from a lot of the mainstream media, and what, which side that is depends on, you know, which satellite you're. You know, you're getting your press from a lot of the time. So, I mean, I would suggest we're living in a kind of propagandized world now, which is almost, you know, like in the run-up to World War II style propaganda, particularly this total failure to analyze the things like the Brussels attack, because other ones are happening again and again. This is a very dangerous kind of world, and this is why I've tried to do exactly that. Pretty much, we didn't have a show this week, so Good Friday, I had the day off, but I thought I'll sit down and actually pull together some of the analysis of the Brussels attacks, because nobody actually, I couldn't see anyone anywhere in the world who was really referring to some of the basic stuff to do with Brussels, like the last attacks in Brussels, terror attacks, were in the 1980s. In supermarkets, these guys turned up with carnival masks on and guns and started shooting people in supermarkets in Brussels and Brabant, which is a town nearby. And it was at the time when there was a lot of pressure on the Belgian government from the US to introduce the cruise missiles into these kind of things that tool around. They're nuclear missiles, but they're mobile, and they go drive around the roads, and then they stop in the woods, and they can fire their nuclear missile off. But the Americans wanted these in Belgium, and the Belgian government was saying, look, we don't want these. And then all of a sudden, up pops a whole load of terrorists in Brabant and start killing people at random. And this shocked the whole population, and particularly these things are aimed at the political leadership, really. Into accepting the US ideas and the US missiles, we need these for protection, because the terrorists were, by the media and by the authorities, were blamed, the far left was blamed, supported by the Soviet Union, supposedly, you know, these far left terrorists, where do they get these Kalashnikovs from, etc., you know, so that there was absolutely no mention of that being the last big terrorist attacks in Belgium. And there was no mention either of the political corruption that's been going on there for decades. Things like the De Treux affair, which was a paedophile scandal in Brussels, which, you know, it certainly wasn't dealt with. I mean, it was the biggest demonstration in Belgian history, apparently, on the streets in 2002, I think it was. But these paedophilia had been going on there with complete impunity for 7 years, from 1995 up to 2002. And finally, it came to a head in 2002, and Alenka Frankel did a brilliant documentary, correspondent documentary about it, The Belgian X-Files, for the BBC. But again, none of the problems with the political landscape in Belgium over the years really get looked at all. It's just as if it's just one incident, and we're going to explain it as that. I would just say one thing about this big demonstration yesterday.
Yeah, Kendra, just touch on that quickly before we have to leave you.
Okay, because we had a load of neo-Nazis, didn't we?
Yeah, we did indeed.
Slamming into the peace vigil. First of all, the public were told, don't come to the peace vigil.
Yeah,
right.
Correct.
What on earth is all that about? And they said, don't have a march.
We don't possibly have the police resources to protect you.
We had several hundred neo-Nazis turning up. Now, the police infiltrate these neo-Nazi gangs. They know exactly what the neo-Nazis are up to. Also, the neo-Nazis got together a fair distance away from the square, and the police just allowed them to march right into the vigil. Now, this to me indicates that this is a theatre we're watching here. I mean, we had a very good police chief.
It's slightly reminiscent of what was happening in Kiev, isn't it?
Exactly. And, I mean, you know, what the police do is they identify these sorts of flashpoints well beforehand, and then they make sure they don't happen. That is if they're doing their job. These Belgian police are clearly not doing their job. That really does annoy me when I see things like that happening. If that's what they're being paid for, to keep people like that apart. And don't tell me there's not enough police around. I just don't believe it. This is made for television. And again, we're seeing the media being used as simply a way to manipulate. This is what I mean about this propagandized world. The media being used to simply manipulate public opinion and to focus people on a sort of physical punch-up rather than actually to really be intelligent, intellectual, journalistic, and drill down into what is, you know, what is really behind the Brussels attacks. And the analysis has been simply zero, I would say.
Tony, we're going to have to leave it there. We've taken it right up as far as we can. Brilliant as usual. Thanks very much for your input today.
If anyone wants to read my piece, if you just go to the web at thisweek.org.uk, you'll find I've done a whole analysis of it with loads of links to, you know, for the references for everything I've been saying about Brussels, which I think is pretty clear to me is a put-up job. It's probably nothing to do with Syria whatsoever.
Tony, thank you very much as usual. Tony Gosling there from the UK.
Cheers, Pippa.
Talk Radio Europe.